get it started in
News Talk AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Good morning and welcome to your Monday Super Bowl hangover edition of Justice and Drew. I am Drew, that man over there, the MVP of this morning show, John Justice.
Thanks. MVP of my heart.
Thanks, everybody. What did I do to deserve this?
Didn't wear a hat.
True story. Yeah. I know.
Hey, come on. This hat looks nice.
I'm kind of, it doesn't matter. We don't have to talk about my hat. There's so many other things to talk about. I was about to go on a hat rant. It's completely unnecessary. Good morning to the two of you.
Good morning, Sam. Pushing our buttons this morning and answering your phone calls at 651-989-5855.
We made it. Looks like we made it.
That
thing happened.
Eagles fans, at least to the best of my knowledge this morning, did not destroy our city.
No, not ours.
Philadelphia's.
They destroyed their own.
Philadelphia's still standing.
There are some amazing videos out there floating around on social media this morning of the celebration / riots in Philadelphia.
Even I'm so cops. Confused because I feel like they would riot if they lost, but they'll also riot if they win.
Well,
so
even cops were out there. There was one video I saw where you had a bunch of fans sort of running down the street, hooping and hollering and yelling and jumping, and there's a cop right in the middle just jumping up and down, high-fiving everybody, you know, fist pumping. Like, good. Y'all have fun.
I've got entrepreneurial ideas based off of what happened in Philadelphia. So we'll get into it later on because it you see that rioting take place in Philly, and then you kind of compare it to when sort of the other violent riots happen via protests. And it's clear that when we as human beings, this is not a shock, when we as human beings are amped up for some reason, we need to find a better outlet. Like, there needs to be some place else to go and direct the energy. Because you, on the positive side, on the negative side.
Come in here and break stuff store.
Yeah. Well,
here. Like a store that is just that you can come in, break stuff. Pay for the stuff you broke and then leave.
Well, here's what I was thinking, and I will get way ahead, but since we're there, here's what I was thinking. If you have you can do this with major court cases, okay? If you think a court case is going to go a particular way and you think there's going to be violent, angry protests, if you've got something like a Super Bowl happening and you think that your city who's playing might be subjected to this, what you need is you need another location. You need like another large area arena designated for those individuals who may need an outlet, and then just fill it with a bunch of stuff they can destroy. And then funnel everybody out of the bars to that location. Yeah.
So all the stuff that like Goodwill won't take.
Right.
Put in this stadium.
Right. Yeah. You have the city for the year, like hang on to all that stuff they usually leave on the side of the curb.
Right.
The dresser, the beds, you know, whatever. And then have it in waiting.
Satellite and cable receivers that have piled up in your closet that you don't know what to do with.
Put it in the practice football facility. And then once it's open, whoever won can just go there and just set the place ablaze.
Go to town.
Crying out loud, man. That was it's funny because that was a really, in my opinion, a very good, straightforward Super Bowl night.
It was a really fun game.
The game was great.
It was a good game.
The commercials were fairly solid. I personally thought that Justin Timberlake's halftime show was really enjoyable.
I enjoyed it.
I just thought it was like a very sort of, that was a Super Bowl.
That's how a Super Bowl should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good game. It was a fun game. And It was a good offensive game, which I think for, you know, it has a broader appeal than a good defensive game. You know, you can have a great football game without a lot of action, but it's still a really great game. You know,
right.
10-7 kind of nail biter with a lot of good defense. But most people don't like watching those kind of games. This game was all offense. It's amazing that the Patriots didn't punt. Didn't turn the ball over until the very end. Racked up like 600 and something yards of offense and lost.
No.
Crazy. That does not happen.
It was such a good ending. And like the times where you could just see Tom Brady just sitting on the field looking. Yeah.
He could have been something. He was so close to making a name for himself in the league. It was so
potential with that.
So much potential, just gone in a heartbeat.
There was one moment where the camera showed Giselle up in the stands, just like this is like 20 seconds left, and she's like playing with her wedding ring.
I saw the same thing. Yes, and I almost tweeted. I was like, is she actually getting ready to take her wedding ring off?
She looked like she was going to pull her wedding ring off.
She's like, I got to question this whole thing.
There's 20 seconds left, and she's literally sitting there, rolling her wedding ring around.
I thought exactly the same. Thing. That's
okay,
so
I'm glad that
funny.
I'm not the only one who picked up on that because I almost tweeted it, but I wanted to find a photo of it first and I couldn't.
Same thing. I was nanoseconds away from tweeting. I'm like, I don't have a photo of it and I don't want to back it up. And
it was so funny.
No quarterback, right? No quarterback has ever put up the slate of numbers that Tom Brady put up last night and won and lost.
Yeah.
Not only that, those numbers lost. To a rookie quarterback.
To a backup quarterback.
To a backup quarterback. Yeah, for all intents and purposes. But I mean, he had a great night and then still he's a lost.
I don't know a lot about the
Eagles. Too bad. I don't know if he'll be back or not. You know, I don't know if he'll have another chance.
I don't know about a lot about the Eagles roster or their story or anything, but is Nick Foles kind of like their Case Keenum?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a story I can appreciate. Yeah. I mean, good for him.
I was rooting for him. I did a little bit more reading up on Foles and had a little bit of background on him because I watched him play when he was at the University of Arizona, and he seems like a really solid dude. And so I was rooting for him. Man, he played a hell of a game last night.
I like Nick Foles. I've always been a Nick Foles fan, even back in the days when he was playing for the University of Arizona. So it's always cool to see somebody like a Nick Foles who, you know, a lot of football fans and a lot of football pundits and stuff, they sort of write him off. Like, oh yeah, he's a decent backup, you know, and he can probably start somewhere. Go out there, win a Super Bowl, get an MVP award. I mean, that's something that, you know, he gets to enjoy the rest of his life. Will he ever be back there? Who knows? I don't know. But good for him.
And the one thing we haven't mentioned, which we will be talking a bunch about today, was the memo. The memo got released on Friday.
I remember that.
Yeah. I was weeping like the Statue of Liberty for an entirely different batch of reasons. And so we'll get into that. We'll get into that memo. Oh my gosh.
We've got our DC correspondent Andrew Langer joining us at 7 this morning, and that will be the main topic of that conversation. But first, Sam has been in there scouring the internet.
How's it going? How's it going? Okay.
It's going.
Okay, cool. You got a few more minutes left. So.
It's fine. Internet's fine this morning.
It is fine.
We'll bring you the top five stories you need to know to kick off your Monday next.
Justice in Trudeau.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Monday edition of Justice and Drew. DC correspondent Andrew Langer, powered by Randy's Electric, going to be joining us just after the top of the hour.
We have some commentary from individuals who visited for the Super Bowl. We'll talk about a little bit later on. Get their thoughts on the Twin Cities while they were here.
The local media's interpretation of their
right. Yeah. A lot of it's cold. Right. Funny, just a real quick funny story.
It was really cold.
I was taking. You want to know how my son is doomed as he gets older? I was taking him to his friend's house. Yesterday, right? Lady friend. And he often grabs a movie to watch. And so he gets in the car and he grabbed The Day After Tomorrow. And I go, you grabbed it because it's super cold outside, didn't you? He goes, yes, I did.
Yeah.
That's my boy.
Yeah.
He's raising him up right.
He themed his movie watching.
That's your DNA.
That's right.
Woo! At work.
He's doomed.
Sam has been in there scouring the internet, and she has compiled the top five stories you need to know to kick off your Monday. But before we get to that,
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Yeah, yeah.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweet.
He always tweets.
What now?
Oh, sh**.
The president is up and active this morning. Obviously listening to Justice and Drew.
Yep.
7 minutes ago, President Trump tweeted, "The Democrats are pushing for universal health care while thousands of people are marching in the UK because their U system is going broke and not working. Dems want to greatly raise taxes for really bad and non-personal medical care. No thanks."
Were we arguing about health care currently?
I didn't. When did that come up?
Yeah, I think he's just watching one of the tweets. But I was like, we have other things that we're arguing right now. We don't need to put that one into the mix. We can get back to health care later. We've got other issues.
And then 1 minute ago, the president tweeted, "Thank you to @FoxandFriends, tagging the show, for exposing the truth. Perhaps that's why your ratings are so much better than your untruthful competition." And I was 4 O's in the so.
He types like me.
Yeah.
He's like us.
You know what? And we'll get to it. But based off of the details of the Nunes FISA memo, yeah, you tweet all you want, man. I'm trying to carry. It's hard because it's been the weekend, but I'm trying to carry over the outrage that I had Friday after seeing the details of that. And again, we'll talk about this with our DC correspondent, Andrew Langer, in a bit in the top five. But you know what? Based on the details of that memo, yeah, you keep tweeting Trump. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
I think he's earned himself a reprieve from tweet criticism for a little while.
At least a week or two.
Right. Yeah, I'm good. I'm fine with that. We will get into all the details of the memo a little bit later in the show. But first, let's get into Sam's top five stories for a Monday.
Number one.
Nick Foles led the Eagles to their first Super Bowl title right here in Minneapolis yesterday. From Channel 5, Nick Foles, who came on in relief when second-year standout Carson Wentz out of North Dakota State went down with a season-ending injury in Week 14, is a big reason why. He threw for 373 yards and 3 touchdowns while catching another as the Eagles held off the dynastic New England Patriots 41-33 in the Super Bowl at U.S. Bank Stadium on Sunday. Foles said, "I felt good. You never really know what it's going to be like when you're going into the Super Bowl. I've never been here before, so there are normal nerves. You've got some butterflies. It's a big game, but I felt calm. The big thing that helped me was knowing I didn't have to be Superman. I have amazing teammates around me."
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, he's got a lot of weapons, and I mean, just look at like Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, having a receiver like Alshon Jeffrey on your team makes your job as a quarterback so much easier. There was that couple plays where you know Nick Foles just sort of hucked it in and Jeffrey's general direction.
right.
And Jeffrey's went and made a spectacular plays. And I mean, he's a big, tall receiver, and you just get it near him and he can catch almost anything you throw his way.
Sunday marked the Patriots' 8th Super Bowl appearance since the 2001 season, and quarterback Tom Brady and company were trying for their 6th title.
Wah, wah, wah.
Which would have tied the Pittsburgh Steelers for the most by any team. Instead, it was the underdog Eagles who claimed their first, having lost in their previous 2 Super Bowl appearances. Even as the 40-year-old Brady, this season's NFL MVP, threw for 505 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Look, and let's look at Brady appropriately. He's lost 3 Super Bowls.
That's okay. Right.
I mean, what a loser that guy is. I heard some commentary this morning that I actually kind of agreed with, and somebody had made a comment about him losing to, you know, you have Brady and everything he's accomplished, losing to Foles and how new he is to the sport, and they made a comment like, well, it's kind of unfair to say that Brady lost to Foles. You know, there are other players involved, you know, the whole team. But that being said, right, I do want to give a little bit of credit where credit is due on Foles, because there was a moment coming back after half when they were going into the fourth quarter and the defense couldn't get anything done. The Eagles, Philadelphia's even defense couldn't get anything done. And if Foles hadn't stepped up, and he looked confident. Yeah. And he drilled a couple of those in and made the end of that game happen. So he does deserve a lot of credit for that win.
One of my big pet peeves when people are talking and covering football, and you see professionals do this, you see ESPN people do this, is when they compare teams like it's a quarterback versus quarterback matchup. Right. They're never on the field at the same time. They don't play against each other. It's the quarterback versus the defense matchup. It wasn't a Tom Brady versus Nick Foles game, you know, and it wasn't a, you know, when they did it with the Saints, like when the Saints came here, it was like, can Case Keenum out-duel Drew Brees? Like, they're not going to be playing against each other.
Yeah.
It's the Vikings defense versus Drew Brees. It was the Eagles defense versus Tom Brady and vice versa.
I wonder what the quarterback, this is the, and the, not a counter argument, but I do wonder if you're the quarterback, are you directly matching yourself up, your performance during the game to the performance of the other quarterback? In which case you can kind of make that argument of those two guys are keeping an eye on each other.
I doubt it. You know, I doubt it. I doubt quarterbacks. I doubt any athlete really thinks that way. They go out there, they know they have a specific job that they have to do, and they can't let, you know, the only sport I think where that might come into play is golf, when you are playing sort of one-on-one against another person.
Sure,
and you, and you might have to adjust your game based on what your opponent has done. When it's football, it's such a team sport. You have, you know, very specific jobs that you have to go out there and do. And if Nick Foles is worried about what Tom Brady is doing, then Nick Foles isn't worrying about the job that he has to do.
Number two.
A historic day is expected today at MSP after the Super Bowl. From Channel 5, officials at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport are preparing for the busiest day of departures in the airport's history. The airport is expecting...
Getting the hell out of here. It's cold.
The airport is expecting 70,000 people to fly out of MSP today, which is twice as many as the typical day. Phil Burke, the director of operations at MSP, is encouraging travelers to get to the ticket counter 3 hours before they depart. The Transportation Security Administration will have every lane open with extra officers and canines to screen. Burke said the ticketing lobby is expected to be the busiest. Burke also said, what we see on busy days is that the lines will crisscross, so we're going to have a large volunteer contingent out in the lobby trying to organize that by airline and security checkpoints.
Well, not even, thankfully there's no snow falling. I don't know about you guys, because we're kind of all over the map in terms of where we live respective to one another, but we got a bunch of snow on Saturday.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, we got a lot. Did you get a lot of snow over in your neck of the woods? Because we got it. Yes. Yeah, we got a ton.
It snowed all day.
Yeah, it snowed all day. And then even during the evening when we were sleeping, we got some.
Yeah. But I mean, at least they're not dealing with that today. It's just cold.
Right.
Yeah.
Give me back to some warm temps.
Yeah, there's going to be not only a busy day at MSP, but they're expecting your morning commutes to be a little longer than usual as well.
Oh, is Black Lives Matter protesting again?
Yeah, they're blocking... Blocking trains and stuff.
We'll get into that next hour.
Yeah, more of Sam's Top 5 coming up right after this.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk. AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew along with Sam as we continue to work through the Top 5 this morning.
Number 3.
Schumer is urging Trump to allow Dems to release their version of the FISA memo.
Mm-hmm. We have a memo, too. Why don't you just go out and just say what they want to say?
We put it in a memo, too.
Sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself.
From Reuters, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and fellow congressional Democrats are ratcheting up the pressure on President Trump to release the Democrats' version of the Republicans' so-called FISA memo in the interest of full transparency. The New York Senator.
I have a preview of the memo. It's
please.
Yeah, I found a little bit of it got leaked. Uh-huh. It says, nuh-uh.
Yeah. No.
Uh-uh.
But Trump.
Yeah, Trump. Yeah. The New York Senator and others made their plea on Sunday, 2 days after Republican leaders of the House Intelligence Committee released their memo, which alleges abuses by the FBI and Justice Department when requesting a surveillance warrant from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, or FISA Court, on then-Trump campaign advisor Carter Page. Schumer said, I believe it is a matter of fundamental fairness that the American people be allowed to see both sides of the argument and make their own judgments. The GOP memo alleges the warrant was requested by the two federal agencies based, at least in part, on a largely substantiated anti-Trump dossier financed by Democrats.
So the real short version, okay, is the DNC and the Clinton campaign hired Fusion GPS, led by this sort of disgraced foreign spy, to create this dossier, of which is just nothing but gossip. The dossier was peddled to the FBI. The FBI then peddled it to the FISA court using news articles that were created because Christopher Steele gave the dossier to media outlets like Yahoo, who published the story. So the FBI used that story to lend credibility to the dossier that led to the spying of an American citizen in Carter Page.
Yep.
Gross.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened.
Oh.
Yeah. And the look, this Democratic memo, this counter memo, it will end up getting released. I'm certain of it. It'll, you know, in the interest of full transparency, and it is going to basically just counter and most of what the Republicans are claiming with saying that, yeah, but we also included this and we also included that. But the New York Times got their hands on the memo, or at least got excerpts of it or something, and then basically admit that, yes, this was politically motivated.
Right.
There were political motivations at play here. If the Democrats are even admitting that, then what you have here is the Obama administration, the Department of Justice, the FBI, all working together using unsubstantiated, debunked opposition research to influence an election, to take down a political opponent. This is rather horrifying stuff here.
Even if you are so misguided and your judgment is so off that you believe the Fusion GPS dossier is legit, because it's not. But even if you are, then you should at least be outraged. Mm-hmm. That was the only reason why the FISA court issued that warrant. Point being that I've heard many people over the weekend argue that, well, I've gone and requested FISA warrants before and received them based off of similar intelligence and similar means. Okay, that is a problem because FISA should not, that FISA court should not be issuing these warrants based off of garbage like this.
Right, and this goes back to when we first talked to Katie Pavlich about this, when we first had her on, when the rumors of this memo were starting to circulate and we were seeing lawmakers sort of react to it. This is the opportunity to reform or even obliterate the entire FISA court.
Right.
And start from scratch. Because if that's true, if what you just relate is actually true, which I have no reason to believe that it isn't, then the FISA court is completely corrupt.
Yeah.
And unconstitutional.
We have more time throughout the show to get into it, but it's just gross. It is just gross.
Number 4.
And the Amtrak boss is blaming CSX and the feds after a deadly crash in South Carolina. From Fox News, following a third fatal Amtrak crash in recent months, the railroad's boss said yesterday that Freight Railroad CSX was responsible for Sunday's collision in South Carolina that left 2 dead and a ton of people injured. Amtrak president and chief executive Richard Anderson said CSX was responsible for the tracks and signals in the area of south of Columbia in South Carolina, including one switch that diverted the Amtrak train onto an occupied track. He said CSX had lined and padlocked the switch off the main line to the siding, causing the collision. CSX did not address Anderson's comments, but said that it was working with federal investigators, adding that both Amtrak and CSX offered condolences to the families of 2 Amtrak employees who died.
Yeah, we've had this, and I know it's coincidental, but we've had a rash lately.
Yeah,
of these
weird train.
These train wrecks. Yeah. I mean, you have the one that took place. What was it up in Portland, or the Pacific Northwest?
Right.
And then we had the one which was again sort of an accident with the garbage truck with the GOP, and then this. It's hard to tie all of them together, except to say that. Look, this is old technology,
yeah.
And you can, at least in my opinion, and we'll get into this later on next hour because there's talk about, you know, with Black Lives Matter shutting down the Green Line. But look, this is old technology, and when we look at spending taxpayer dollars for things like light rail and all this, it's hard to bring the two together. But it's also, I think, irresponsible to not use these stories and go, look, this is a dangerous mode of transportation, and we have better ways to transport things now. At a bare minimum, we shouldn't be building new choo-choo trains to carry people to and fro.
Number 5.
A CNN travel article raised some local ire, calling St. Paul a neighborhood of Minneapolis.
Aw. It's a suburb.
A suburb of Minneapolis.
Yeah, I'd be annoyed too. I'm not going to lie.
From the Pioneer Press, CNN poked the bear on Friday when it posted a travel article calling St. Paul a neighborhood of Minneapolis. And it's not the article aimed at Super Bowl visitors that's the problem, so much as the headline. Minneapolis's must-see neighborhoods. Listed along with the North Loop, downtown, uptown, and the lakes is St. Paul, which is most definitely not a neighborhood of Minneapolis, but a city all on its own.
Yeah.
And the state's capital city to boot.
Now, this is funny, and this is a funny little story and everything, but it goes to show you like why people get so frustrated with CNN and other news outlets. Yeah. CNN's not the only one. They do so little actual research and journalism. Yeah. They just put crap out there without even like thinking about it or vetting it. This would have taken 20 seconds of an editor looking this over and going, oh, but you know what? St. Paul is actually a city. It's called the Twin Cities. There's two of them. There's Minneapolis. Right. There's St. Paul. They're about the same size. It's a pretty big city, and it's not a neighborhood. It wouldn't have taken any effort to not have this be put out there as listed as a neighborhood of St. Paul. So, if you think, you know, you think about it, do they really vet their political coverage with the same?
Right.
Of course not. They're very lazy.
Well, and the writer of this article was interviewed by the Pioneer Press, and he's like trying to play it off like he meant it all along and it was a total joke. So he said, the writer of the article, he's from Minneapolis, this freelancer, Joel Hoekstra, thought the reaction was typical of the ongoing sibling rivalry between the Twin Cities.
Of course, it's going to, people are going to be upset.
They call the whole city a neighborhood. He said, I do not think that St. Paul is a neighborhood of Minneapolis. Everybody knows it's a suburb of Woodbury, right? In the article.
You're not helping your cause, dude.
Nope. In the article, which tells Super Bowl travelers what else to see while they're in town, Hoekstra calls St. Paul the place to become a kid again, directing folks to the Minnesota Children's Museum, the Science Museum of Minnesota, and the Bell Museum of Natural History. Hoekstra says the ribbing is all in good fun, that he did not write the headline, and that he does not expect the rivalry to be settled anytime soon. He said, I love St. Paul. It's great.
I got to correct you here. There's a misprint in here. Uh-huh. Hoekstra calls St. Paul the place. He said, you said to become a kid again. No, it's broke. To become broke again. That's what that was supposed to say.
Making Minnesota broke again.
Yeah, making Minnesota broke again.
He added slyly that it's a nice, quiet city for people to retreat to after enjoying all the Super Bowl excitement in Minneapolis. If his comments make St. Paulites want to rush to Twitter to post a not-so-Minnesota-nice reply, he wants the public to know he doesn't have a Twitter account. He said, I don't see any of that. Most of the things on Twitter are a big waste of time.
Wow, this guy's just a real winner, isn't he?
Yeah.
Wow. Boy. Just
talk about a hit and run.
Seriously. Twitter does that. Whatever. You're taking me seriously. Drew, to what you were saying about the media and coverage and all that, I wanted to add to that a bit, and good job with the top five, Sam. Our job when we're doing, I don't know if you've thought about this at all. I do like every morning. Our job has become so redundant when we're doing prep, and the reason being is you talk about the hack reporting because you've had so many layoffs over the years of staff and quality writers and news outlets. I'm not giving the fake news a free pass on this. This is just a byproduct of it. It's stunning to me how many times I'll go to an entity, for the sake of argument, like Fox News, and I'll, you know, cut and paste a story because I want to get the font a certain size so I don't waste so much ink. And I go, oh, that's not Fox News, that's Reuters.
Yeah.
Or I'll go to the Star Tribune. Oh, that's not Star Tribune, that's Associated Press.
Right.
I mean, and it's just how many
Washington Post.
Yeah. How many times I'm pulling up articles thinking it's a different version to get a different angle and say, oh no, that's just a reprint of some other place that had already covered it.
Yep.
It's amazing how that is now.
Yep. And I used to spend a lot of time looking at different versions of stories because you'll find a lot of different information based on, you know, where it's out of. But more and more often now it's like you'll go to the Pioneer Press and Star Tribune and, you know, two or three other news outlets, and you'll pull all the different they're not different at all.
No.
It's just the same version completely reprinted.
Well, and what's fascinating about it too is that you can get now, when you want to get the other sort of versions, it takes a little bit more work, but you go to certain particular writers on Twitter, and then you can go and get better details in 140 or 280 characters on Twitter on a particular story than you are in the non-different versions of the story.
Yep. We are waiting to speak with our DC correspondent coming up here in about 15 minutes, but we have to revisit this again.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Yeah, yeah.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
He always tweets.
What now?
Oh, sh**.
All right, I think I'm on to Trump. He just likes the song.
Like, every time I tweet, they play this song. Wow, you know, Trump, you can just call us up. Well,
yeah, yeah, we'll send you the MP3.
You can make it your ringtone.
Yeah, exactly. Make it like your text alert.
Dude, how great would it be if Trump set it up on his phone, like when he tweeted that play?
Trump tweets.
That gives me an idea.
7 minutes ago, the President of the United States tweeted, "Little Adam Schiff, who is desperate to run for higher office, is one of the biggest liars and leakers in Washington, right up there with Comey, Warner, Brennan, and Clapper!" Exclamation point.
Wow!
Adam leaves closed committee hearings to illegally leak confidential information. Must be stopped! Exclamation point.
Wow! That's a big tweet.
That's a shot across the back.
That was just...
Little Adam Schiff.
Wow. One of the biggest liars and leakers in Washington. Right up there with Comey.
I love when he just tosses little in front of someone's name. Because it's like, how do you... You really can't comment any of his nicknames without just sounding like a child.
I'm big. I'm big.
I'm telling you, he's listening to the show.
I'm not little.
He's pulling... He's doing what we do to Nick. To Adam Schiff.
Adam's going to tweet, "I am an average size
I am an average size leaker."
651-989-5855. So we were discussing during the break, want to talk a little bit about Philly and how they're burning the city down. But during the Justin Timberlake halftime show, that was really cool when not only, I think we all agreed. Sam, did you like the Prince tribute?
I did. I thought it was really, really cool.
I thought it was really well done. Yeah. I was pleased with it.
And he's just fun. I mean, Justin Timberlake does a good job. I think he's just fun to watch.
I thought that...
Good dancer.
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah, man. At one point, at one point, I think out loud, I said, "That man is talented. He's got moves." I thought that it was very tastefully done. There was a controversy. There was some speculation that he was going to use a hologram. And Sheila E., who likes to lead the glamorous life, said there would be no holographic image of Prince during the show. People were freaked out about it. So they just used that big curtain and projected and timed it to the piano version of it was "I Would Die for You," right?
Mm-hmm.
See, I thought the choice of that song is what made that work. Like, to me, if he had gone the route of something like Purple Rain, which is sacred.
Right.
Right?
You can't touch. Don't touch Purple
Rain. You don't mess with Purple Rain. But the fact that he did a slowed down version of, you know, "I Would Die for You," I was like, that was a really good, well thought out song choice.
Yep, I agree. I thought it was a good song choice. I thought it was the appropriate length. It wasn't like over the top. It didn't last too long. I didn't quite get the concern over a holographic image. Whatever. I mean, it's just technology. It's not like, it didn't bother me.
No,
it's not like they're trying to pretend that he's still alive.
No, I think the holographic image was going to be more of, now you're doing a recreation as opposed to doing actual footage of him.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought that was better. I wouldn't have had a problem with the hologram either.
I wouldn't care. But I liked the projection on the big sheet.
Yeah.
And the singing along, and it made it look like they were doing a bit of a duet. But the coolest moment of all was when they pulled back and they showed the shot of the stadium.
How did they do that?
And all the lights, you know, everything started turning purple, and then it just was that Prince symbol.
Now, was that all? I know the buildings...
That was fantastic.
I know the buildings lighting up purple were real, but were also was the Christmas light symbol thing real as well?
I assume so.
I think it was, too. Who was in charge of that?
Probably Jacob.
Jacob Fry?
Probably the boy mayor.
Oh, yes.
I think he was running around ziplining from point to point.
I got my left to flip it on the lights.
Yeah, flip it on the lights. Like manually flip it on.
Well, you didn't see him at all.
He's an unbridled ball of energy, John.
You didn't see him at all leading up to that. So maybe he was just sitting there the whole time since kickoff with the plug, just waiting for the moment to... I got on my leftover white Christmas lights. Yay!
Yay!
Whee! Yeah, apparently, just real quick, out of Philly, after the Super Bowl last night, the fans smashed a Macy's store window, looters broke into a convenience store, and some flipped over a car. Three people fell to the ground from light poles and lost consciousness, while other fans were seen in an online video leaping off a hotel entrance awning.
Huh?
At least one car was set ablaze.
Why?
Why?
Why
do you do
we're
that?
We're so happy!
I like it when the teams that I root for win, and that's cool, but where does this urge to destroy things come from?
I'm telling you, we need it. Well, I think, didn't they try to do this in Baltimore? Wasn't there like a protest zone that like the mayor tried to create? We just need, whenever you think there's going to be a riot that breaks out for whatever reason, you just need to find a facility where you can just funnel everybody into there. Just burn this place to the place to the the protest celebration facility.
Every city has a part of town that's kind of run down or some vacant lots and things like that. You funnel them all there.
Yeah, find a building they're going to tear down. Just go do our work for us. Just go do that. That's right.
651-989-5855 is the phone number, or please use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter if you want to communicate with the show at any time.
Andrew Langer, our DC correspondent and president of the Institute for Liberty. We will talk Russia, Fuchsia, GPS, memos, and more next.
Justice in-